That's right. We're right here this afternoon. I'm live here at Sharp Facets Gallery. It's been pretty busy here today, and I certainly hope you're going to enjoy the show we have put together for you. First up this afternoon, we're going to play our interview with Lieutenant Governor Glenn McConnell. He was on the air with us this morning, and I wanted to play a portion of the interview for you. It really is some big, important things for seniors. They're trying to make sure that our seniors are not taken advantage of, whether it's in, I call it elder napping, capturing, kidnapping, or whether it is in using prescription drugs that are not yours to use. So that's one part of it, but we talked, the part I've decided to play for you is some of the other stuff we talked about, because I thought it was very interesting what he had to say. So this is the first interview. Second will be our interviews from last night at the dedication of the Veterans Auditorium there at the library, and a very awesome ceremony for a young man who was killed in the line of duty, Eric Pfeiffer, so we'll hear that. And then we're going to hear Congressman Tom Rice, what he had to say last week. So here you go. Here's up our first one from this morning, Lieutenant Governor Glenn McConnell.
Additionally, since I last talked to you, another area that we've run into with seniors is in connectivity, and I've addressed this in previous programs there. We have a problem with best practices being really shared and people information and referral. Let me give you an example of what we came across. Back in about 2009, a gentleman in the intersection of the state had a stroke. Mm-hmm. He got behind. He had to pay some medical bills to get himself well, so he got behind on his electric bill. His electricity got shut off. He continued to live in his house without electricity. A government program was delivering meals there, the contract program through a private vendor. And no one reported that the man was living in the house, a senior, without electricity, without heat, without hot water. Fortunately, just before Christmas, somebody contacted us and said, look, we're worried about this guy. It's getting cold. He doesn't have power. So we checked on him. Our office did. Well, before we were finished, thanks to the great folks at South Carolina Electric and Gas Company, we had to go in and rewire his house because they couldn't cut it back on because of code violations. And we got donations. We paid off his electric bill, got him back on his feet. We had to go in there. We had to put some new windows in, put a hot water tank back in because the other one had rusted out from inactivity. The great thing of this is the public-private partnerships that we got out of that. It's an example of how things can happen. But the other problem we got there is the lack of connectivity. How in the world can somebody sit there and be delivered meals and nobody does a needs assessment and starts activating to help these people? So for us, it's a question of how we match needs to resources. And we're trying to put together through Sustain Our Seniors SC a fabric where nonprofits and faith-based and for-profits and government can interact in a way where we can match resources to needs and make sure that we end some of the suffering and create a safety net. And that's what I'm trying to do, is activate an infrastructure that will long outlive my tenure as lieutenant governor.
Well, these programs, you know, that is, I think, here in Greenwood, of course, we have Meals on Wheels. And I would hope that that type of thing wouldn't happen because of what Meals on Wheels does to protect our seniors.
Well, they're a great program. And see, that's a private nonprofit. It's a great program, does a great job. This particular instance where this occurred, it's my understanding that was being serviced by a private vendor who was contracted. But I really blame somewhat the governmental structure. If they had engaged in a needs assessment, and what I've done is enforce back across this entire network needs assessments. You're being paid to do them. You will do them for the reason that needs assessments allows us to find out what their needs are. and then match their needs to the resources. Had that been done for this gentleman, what we did for him this year would have been done years ago, and at a much less cost.
Absolutely. So this sounds like an awesome Sustain Seniors SC?
Yeah, it's SOS SC Incorporated.
Wow.
Sustain Our Seniors South Carolina Incorporated is what it means, and it was a nonprofit. Our office set it up so that this would continue. There's already donations flowing into it. Additionally, because of the power settlement, Duke Energy has agreed to make a charitable donation to the state of $1 million, which will be used for outreach and for information and referral and education for seniors to connect them to resources across South Carolina. That's another accomplishment that we've been able to pull off. And despite all this hard work and everything we've done and everything you've done on this particular issue, it was sad again to see this year that neither political party put it on their legislative priorities, and it was not mentioned in the state of the state by either the Republicans or the Democrats.
That is sad, because that is such a growing population here
in
South Carolina.
It is. It's going to double in the next 15 years. It's the health challenge of the century. Seniors have paid their dues all their lives. They're just looking for a helping hand. It could be a senior center. It could be a trip to a drugstore. It could be a meal a day because they're a shut-in. And one of the things we've done since we've been here is we've finally been able to put into place a data reporting system of what we're doing with the money that's been given to us. And I can report to you that we can document that 5,005 seniors who have three or more ADLs, and these are the types of adult disabilities that affect daily functions like dressing or bathing or something.
Mm-hmm.
When you have three or more of those under federal law, you qualify to go into a nursing home. By our program, which is 40 times cheaper than a Medicaid nursing bed, we've kept those people in their homes where they want to stay. And it has saved the taxpayers. If we had them in Medicaid nursing beds, we'd be spending close to $250 million, and we're not. Instead, we're spending about $26 million.
Wow. That is phenomenal. How can you leave this office, Glenn?
Pardon?
I said, how can you leave this office, Glenn?
Well, let me tell you some of the things that happened. Some alumni came to me and said, look, your alma mater needs you to come back here. It's in a sea of controversy, where it should go. They need you. The other thing was we were having opposition thrown on us in a primary, and if I had to go out and get on a campaign trail for the next 6 to 7 months, I couldn't finish what needed to be done. And so it seemed to me that the best route that I could have, the most positive contribution I could have, was try to stay out of the political arena and stay focused on getting this stuff done, and also have the opportunity to go and try to help the College of Charleston go to the next level.
Well, then I need to ask you the next question. Do you feel you'll be able to get all the programs in place that you want to get in place before you leave?
I am hopeful that I can. The problem will be, will the next lieutenant governor be dedicated to seniors? And that has bothered me, because some of the candidates that are out there think they're economic developers and all of that. For the next 4 years, the law is that the lieutenant governor will be the chief advocate for the aging population and adults with disabilities. And what I'm hopeful is by putting some of these programs will be self-sustaining, but by elevating this, that the public will demand that this level of attention remain.
That's pretty smart there, Glenn McConnell. I applaud you, because you're right. There hasn't been that attention out there, and you constantly pull us back to the fact that this is the office and what it's supposed to focus on.
Exactly. And so I'm hopeful that a candidate will step forward who will have a passion for this issue. And that's what's important.
Absolutely. Well, Lieutenant Governor Glenn McConnell. It is always a pleasure to have you on the show. You certainly have brought a lot of light. That new website, that new program that is up and going, that is a 501c, what's the name of it again?
That's that will be called SOSSC Incorporated.
Okay. And do you already have a website on this. Am I correct on that?
Debbie, do you know if they have a website yet? They have not set that up yet.
Okay.
They have, just a month ago, we got the board of directors appointed and operational. They had another one. They've already adopted a mission and a vision for where they're going, and it's exciting. And, Ann, I would tell you that up the road, we're working very hard to finish developing a module that we hope will become a template that will go across the state to help with volunteers for seniors in transportation. These are the sorts of things that, again, if I was able to stay out of the political fight, I could stay focused and get something done. And that goes back to an early remark I made on your show. I believe that people of the state are so fed up with government that's always about the next election rather than the next problem.
I agree
and
with you.
And I didn't understand why they wanted to get opposition on us with the job that we were doing. Nobody else was getting it that early. But I just knew, and I could have won. I don't think we've seen polling. It's not that we're walking away from a fight.
Right.
But the key is to get something done. It's frustrating to serve and not get something done. And I told my staff, I said, look, if I stay out of the political fight, nobody can contend that this is being done or that's being done for a headline. Instead, we're making headway. And that's what I want to do. That ought to be my legacy, is that I got something done.
Can we send you to Washington?
Yeah, thank you. I'm not sure I want to go there.
I know that. I wouldn't either. Hey, Lieutenant Governor Glenn McConnell, thanks so much. We look forward to talking to you in the future.
Look forward, Ann. Thank you, too.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care now.
Bye-bye. All righty. Bye-bye.
All right, so there you go. Some interesting facts with Lieutenant Governor Glenn McConnell, working hard for our seniors right here in the state of South Carolina. And, of course, he does plan to leave this office at the end of his term. The election is upcoming. He bowed out, and so there you go. He wanted to get a job done, and I commend him for that. Hey, I'm Ann Eller. Let's hear a short word from our sponsors. When we come back, we're going to have a lot more to talk about, so don't you go away.
Gold. Gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here. Last night, we had a phenomenal ceremony at the Veterans Auditorium there at the library. A new case, was installed that actually was paid for by the library over there, to house veterans items. And yesterday, they honored Eric Pfeiffer, who died in 2005. He did live here in Greenwood and did attend a Greenwood High, but then moved to Tennessee. His dad was the ROTC instructor there at Lander, and it was an awesome ceremony. We wanted to play some clips for you to get a feel for what went on there if you were not there. If you were there, you know what I'm talking about. First up is Mark Allison, who introduced everything. Here is Mark Allison, County Council, part of current County Council.
My name is Mark Allison, and I am Chair of the County Council of Greenwood County. It is my honor to welcome you here tonight for this very special occasion. We are here tonight to dedicate the American Veterans Auditorium. If you'll give me just a moment, I would like to let you know how this kind of came to life. I was elected in 2010 and started serving on County Council in 2011. We were meeting over at the courthouse. Somewhere in the spring of 2011, we were informed that our meetings would be moved to the American Veterans Auditorium. We came over here and started having our meetings. And I noticed that on the door, as you come into the auditorium, there was a little plaque that said American Veterans Auditorium. And I began to ask the question is, how did it get that name? And I found out that someone made a large contribution to the construction of this hall. I believe it was $500,000. And they had only one request. They did not want their names mentioned, who they were. They had one request, that it be named the American Veterans Auditorium. And when I was elected as chairman of this council in last year, in January of 11, I met with Mr. Bolt, who is our Veterans Affairs Director. And I began to ask him some questions for some recommendations of what maybe we could do to pay even more tribute to those who have served us so faithfully. And I don't know if any of you know Mr. Bolt. Some of you I know do, some of you don't. He lit up like a Christmas tree. He was so excited, and immediately we started arranging furniture and deciding what we were going to do. From that, I went before county council, and we met with the library board, and we decided that we would construct a showcase, a case to display our soldiers who have served us. And this came to life last year. It was installed, and then I left it, council left it to Mr. Bolt in his office to decide who would be our first honoree of this hall and of this case. And he came to me and brought me a suggestion. And I have wrestled all day on what I would say and to you this evening. I wrote several things I wanted to say, but I just want to talk to you from my heart tonight, tell you that I'm honored to be here and I'm honored to be a part, just a small part, of making this come to life. I am a father of two sons, two young sons. My 9-year-old is infatuated with the military. And I can see every day that he talks about the military and things and tanks. We live in the little town of 96, and if you've ever been to 96, we have a tank. And every time we go to the park, I have to get him off of that tank. So he's infatuated. But as I became familiar with our honoree tonight, the truth and the realization hit me that there is a possibility that in the days to come, that instead of me sitting on this side of this auditorium, I could be sitting where you're sitting tonight in years to come. What a sacrifice. I cannot even imagine the sacrifice that your family has made for our nation. I want you to know I appreciate you being here tonight, and it is an honor to be in your presence tonight.
That was County Council Chairman Mark Allison. We then had some other parts. There was the prayer, the singing of the national anthem, and I'll tell you, one of the most moving parts to me was when they were just going to play the national anthem, and as the song progressed through, you started hearing people singing the words. It was pretty awe-inspiring. There were a lot of awe-inspiring moments, but there was a flag that had been flown over the Capitol. Jeff Duncan had that here for them, for the parents of Eric Pfeiffer. And then there was a letter written by Senator Tim Scott, and it was read by Susan Aiken, one of his directors over in the Anderson area. She was here to do this. So let's hear what Senator Tim Scott, the letter that he wrote.
It's an honor for me to be here tonight and meet this wonderful family. I would like to present this letter tonight from U.S. Senator Tim Scott. Dear friends, thank you for the kind invitation to participate in the unveiling of this case as a memorial to area veterans and a tribute to the memory of Sergeant Eric Andrew Pfeiffer. I regret that my schedule prevents me from being with you personally today. Eric was born into an Army family and clearly knew that he was called to military service. He attended school here in Greenwood, and his family still makes their home here in 96. After his enlistment, Eric served with honor and distinction and made the ultimate sacrifice during Operation Iraqi Freedom while on his second deployment. We gather here today to pay tribute to Eric's life and to offer this case as a symbol to all those who served our country. The selfless actions of Eric Pfeiffer and countless numbers of his brothers and sisters in arms must never fade from our collective memory. Their courage and dedication are the very threads that are woven together in the ties that bind us as Americans. For more than two centuries, our sons and daughters have answered the call to preserve our precious freedom and liberty. As we honor Eric Pfeiffer, we also honor all of those who have served and those who supported them at home. May God bless his family as he continues to bless our great nation. Sincerely, Tim Scott. Thank you, sir.
That was, I thought that was a very awe-inspiring, the letter from Senator Tim Scott. Also, after the ceremony, I talked to several people. I want to play their reactions to the ceremony. First, I want to you to listen to Bob Fisher. He, of course, is on County Council. It's one of the many interviews we got, but we're just going to play a few of them. Here is Bob Fisher. Hey, Bob.
Hey,
how are you?
Right?
I'm doing good. What did you think of the ceremony tonight,
that
Bob
was
Fisher?
That was wonderful tribute to a fallen soldier. That was just as nice as it could be.
Absolutely. And I think as a member of council, to do something like this was awesome.
It was befitting. This is the Veterans Auditorium. And it was, when I found out that's what it was and there was no tribute, it made common sense to have something like this. And I don't think they could have made a better presentation for especially the first one.
Well, thank you so much, Bob Fisher.
You're welcome.
Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you too. Yeah.
All right, so there was Bob Fisher. Then I talked to Colonel Wheeler, who has gotten very involved with the Hall of Heroes. He is, of course, a retired colonel, so let's hear what he had to say about the ceremony.
Hi,
well,
how are you doing? I'm doing good. You all right?
I'm good. What'd you think of the ceremony here today?
Beautiful.
Colonel Wheeler?
It was wonderful.
It was wonderful.
And these guys are doing a great job. We're pleased. We're thankful that... we celebrate veterans in Greenwood. That's the key thing. And you know, I'm real pleased because just recently, the governor is pushing for South Carolina to be a veterans-friendly state. So I'm hoping we're going to see more and more with veterans.
Well, what do you think about what they're talking about of pulling back on the military, Colonel Wheeler?
Oh, bad.
And Fort Jackson may be cut back. Did you know that?
I did, and I was at Fort Jackson a couple of weeks ago for a meeting. And, I'm disappointed in our administration with what they're doing with our military. And I'm disappointed in Congress.
I can't believe it.
It's unreal, and we've got to... Unless the people stand up, and not only for our military, but for a lot of issues that's going on in Washington, we've got to work that.
Absolutely.
It's so good to see you, Ann.
It's good to see you. Thanks so much.
I look forward to seeing you.
All right. Why don't you come talk to me on the radio some afternoon?
I will.
Would you like to do that?
I'd love to do that.
All right.
I'll give you a call.
That sounds great.
And we'll work it out.
We'll work
okay?
a date.
How you doing, young lady?
Colonel Wheeler right here on WCRS. And then I talked to Colonel Taylor, who had the job of reading the letter from Eric's commanding officer, who was there beside his side as they fought in Iraq during Operation Iraqi Freedom. And the letter is very detailed and just very, very, you could tell the depths that this commanding officer was feeling when he wrote that letter to Eric's mom, who is Mrs. Mellon, who lives in Tennessee. Now, his parents, his dad here is Bruce. His stepmother is Sandra. That's Bruce and Sandra Pfeiffer. And, of course, they live in 96 right here. But I want you to hear what Colonel Taylor had. He is the he is the ROTC instructor at Emerald. And let's just hear a short clip about what he had to say about reading the letter. I want to ask you.
Yes, ma'am.
How hard was it to read that letter?
It was difficult. I read through it two or three times, and it's so much emotion here.
Right.
You know, and you didn't want to get up there and just be monotone and what have you. You know, try to give it a little feeling, and
I thought you did a good job on it. But you know, when you start reading all the parts of that letter, and having been being in the military and everything, that has to bring a lot of things home to you.
It does. It does. It certainly make me feel that I have been blessed in my many years wearing the uniform. I did lose a brother overseas, and you know, it makes you think about those things.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I want to thank you for your service to our country. We appreciate it very much, and keep doing that good job over there at Emerald High School.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Good seeing you.
All right, that was Colonel Taylor. And, of course, he does teach ROTC over there at Emerald High School. You know, I wanted to play bits and pieces of this so at least you could get a feeling about what was the feeling there last night. We have been, of course, talking about U.S. Army Sergeant Eric A. Pfeiffer, who gave his life for our country so that we could be free today, so that I could be on the radio talking to you, so you could make up whatever choice you'd like to make. And it is, thank God, that we have men and women who give their lives and put themselves in harm's way. The case that is over there, as I told you earlier, was donated by the library, and it is an awesome case over there. It's probably going to be changed quarterly. Eric Pfeiffer was the first to be put in the case, and they're going to do other displays of other military people in the case so that it'll serve as a constant reminder of what our country stands for and what our people stand for and what our people have stood up to. Hey, I'm Ann Eller. We're going to hear a quick word from our sponsors. When we come back, I'm going to play you what Tom Rice had to say the other day. Last night, I saw him on Megyn Kelly. So let's hear what he has to say after this quick word from our sponsor.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help. From McDonald's McCafe cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
Oh, that's right. Right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery. Next interview I have is Congressman Tom Rice. He was on the air with us on February 19th. Did want to replay this. This has to do with the STOP Act and things that are going on in Washington, D.C. And I think Tom Rice has really gotten off to a fast start there, being a freshman, although as you'll hear in the interview, he reminds me he's been a tax attorney and been in business for a long time. So let's join the interview right here, Congressman Tom Rice.
It's pretty close there. I saw the high supposed to be about 71 here in Myrtle Beach. Y'all come on down.
Yeah, I'd love to come on down. I tell you what, nothing would be better. I even understand things are going so well down there that Myrtle Manor got renewed.
Well, I don't know about that. I don't know how accurate a reflection of Myrtle Beach, Myrtle Manor is, but Myrtle Beach is a fun place to be. I bet you've been here once or twice.
Absolutely, I have. And you had, even with all the snow last week, I understand you had the big race down there.
We did, and I think it came off without a snafu, and that's a wonderful thing. A lot of happy people.
Absolutely. Well, we wanted you to call in for a couple of reasons.
One of them was to talk a little bit about this STOP Act, and now you have over 100 sponsors on it. In a nutshell, what's it all about, Tom?
Well, you know, last summer, when the president announced he was going to unilaterally extend the employer mandate under Obamacare, and, you know, the mandates, the Supreme Court has ruled that the mandates are a tax. That's how they ruled Obamacare was constitutional. They said the mandates were a tax. And for the president to be able to unilaterally extend a tax, I said, good grief, how can he possibly do this? See, I'm a tax lawyer and a CPA. So I went to some legal experts at the Congress, and I said, surely he can't do this, and what can we do short of impeaching him to make him simply comply with the law? You know, the president took an oath to protect and defend the Constitution, and the Constitution provides for a separation of powers. That's what protects our freedom.
Yes.
Nobody, the power doesn't rest with any one person. And so for the president that want to be able to make the law and enforce it as well, he's not protecting and defending the Constitution. He's shredding it. He's wiping his feet on the Constitution. And he keeps pressing that further and further. You know, when he says things like, I've got a pen and I've got a phone, if Congress doesn't act on my agenda, then I'm going to enact the law myself. Those are very bold and very clear assertions that he's not bound by the Constitution. So he is absolutely violating the terms of the framework of the government that our founding fathers set up to protect our freedom, and I believe the prosperity of this country came from our freedom. I think we need to do everything we can to uphold that framework and protect our freedom, and that's why I did this. What the STOP Act says is that if a majority of the House votes to do this, then the House as an institution will bring a lawsuit to have the president comply with the law. Now, why didn't I do impeachment? The reason I didn't, the reason I asked him to do short of impeachment, is because I know that requires a vote in the Senate. And Harry Reid and the Senate Democrats, they're not concerned with upholding the Constitution. That's not their focus. Their focus is on protecting the president. So I knew that impeachment was not going to happen. But this can and very likely will happen. When I first filed it, I went and talked to some of the leadership, and their response is, golly, suing the president, that kind of radical. And my response was, really, it's not. What the president is doing is radical. When the president's saying, look, I'm not going to be, you know, I took an oath up to protect and defend the Constitution, but I'm not going to be bound by it, that's radical. When one person thinks they have the power to both enact the law and enforce it, that's radical. And I don't think what we're doing is radical at all.
Now, he just moved the employer mandate. So there is another example of him not abiding by the law, correct?
Well, that's the second time. You know, my background, I'm a tax lawyer and a CPA. And for him to say, okay, you know, the Congress enacted a tax. It was to take effect January 1st of 2014. And then him say, well, you know what? I'm just not going to apply that tax. He has absolutely no right to do that. I'm not sitting here saying that presidents don't have the right to do executive orders. Surely they do. I mean, they have some discretion in enforcing the law. They can say, you know, they can issue an executive order to clarify law, to say how we're going to enforce it. But here, and people always throw out, well, gosh, this president has done fewer executive orders than other people, and that's fine. It's not the number of them, it's the character of them. And here the president is issuing executive orders that are absolutely in opposition, in contradiction to existing law, and he has no power to do that. You know, if the president can say, I'm going to waive this tax, or keep in mind, he's done things like say, I'm going to waive the $60 fee for bailing out insurance companies. I'm going to waive that against my friends at the unions. But I'm going to strictly enforce the mandates against the little sisters of the poor. You know, I'm going to apply the tax away to the people I want to, and I'm not going to apply it to my friends. Think of the implications of that. I mean, if a president can do that, does that mean that the next president could say, well, you know what, I think that anybody contributed to my campaign, I'm not going to apply the maximum tax bracket to them. Okay. Or could the president say, I think the capital gains rate's too high, therefore I'm not going to apply it at all. Or I don't like any of the taxes under the Obamacare, therefore I'm not going to apply them. I mean, if President Obama has the right to do that, why does the next president not have the same right? Clearly, he's so far outside of his bounds, it's just ludicrous that something like this hadn't happened before now. This is a very interesting time in our history. I'm so very proud to be there and in Congress and trying to defend our freedom, and I just appreciate the people of South Carolina who put me there, and I'm going to do everything in my power to represent them well and protect our freedom.
Absolutely. Now, Tom, just where is the STOP Act? Where is it right now, in committee, or is it a bond? Is it coming up for a vote, or where is it?
Well, as I told you, at first the leadership was a little hesitant about it, but it's kind of bowled them over. I mean, the thing is, the president, in terms of getting co-sponsors, I've got 108 right now, at least that last I heard. I get more every day. But the president's, the person who's getting me the co-sponsor is not me, it's the president. Every time he says something like, I'm not going to wait for Congress, or I've got a pen and a phone, I'm going to go around Congress, I get 15 more co-sponsors. So he's doing a great job of drumming those up for me. But I think there's a recognition in the House of Representatives at this point that we have to respond. I think that the president's pressed this to the point that the leadership has no point, no choice but to respond. There's going to be I need to get a vote.
And I
would appreciate if all your listeners out there would contact their friends around the country, make sure their congressmen are on this thing. All the South Carolina Republicans are co-sponsors. And everybody needs to contact John Boehner and Eric Cantor and tell them, look, we've got to have a vote on this. But I think we're going to get a vote on it at this point. I think that we're going to have to. There's going to be a hearing in the Judiciary Committee either next week or the week after. They've asked me to be a witness to talk about congressional standing and this in particular. But there have been a number of law professors and constitutional lawyers who have written articles about this since it came out, and they're pretty uniform in that we do have standing and that we need to do it. Because Obama's pressed this so very, very far.
Sure.
But there's going to be a hearing in Judiciary, and if we get through that, and I think we will, I have heard no proposals that sound more reasonable and logical than this. And then the House Admin Committee will be the committee that will actually have to bring the lawsuit. It's been assigned to their committee, and the chairman of that committee is one of my co-sponsors. And anxious to have the hearing. So it'll come down to leadership and when they allow us to do it. So, have your listeners call the office of the Speaker of the House and the Majority Leader and write and email and let them know that we want a hearing on this, and you'll see it proceed. I really believe that the president has already softened his tack a little on the, as a result of this act coming up and getting support it has. And I'm proud of that, and I'm going to keep pushing it, and hopefully we'll get out of the House, get a vote on it. I think that'll be a great moment for the public to focus on this. I think when the House votes on it, we say, look, our president is very clearly and overtly violating our Constitution. And think of how fundamental that is to your freedom. I think that'll be a great moment for the public to see what's going on in Washington and maybe refocus a little bit the fundamentals. And then when we get a hearing in the courts, I think that'll be another one of those moments. So now I'm really, really excited about it. I don't think it could go any better. And, again, I wish we didn't have to do it. The stop resolution is not my primary focus in Washington. My primary focus in Washington is trying to bring jobs to this country and to South Carolina. And I feel like we're chipping away at some of the things we need to do to make this country competitive. That's my primary focus. But the stop resolution is a very timely thing as well.
Yes, one thing I wanted to ask you, Tom, how did you come up with this? I mean, you're a freshman, and here you are coming up with this big act right here. This is pretty impressive for a freshman.
Well, I practiced I practiced tax law for 25 years, and so I'm not. I may be a freshman congressman, but I'm not. I'm not a freshman in negotiation. I'm not a freshman in mediation. I'm not a freshman in complex business transactions. I'm not a freshman in getting things done. So no, I hear what you're saying. I'm proud of what we're getting accomplished. This is just one little thing that we've gotten done in our first year in Congress for the whole state and for the country, and I'm proud of where we are. And let me tell you, we've got some great congressmen from South Carolina. Trey Gowdy, wow, he is a superstar. Mick Mulvaney, golly, a brilliant man. Mark Sanford, certainly a leader in conservative values. Jeff Duncan, I mean, all these people are just Joe Wilson. Gosh, I was walking through the Capitol with Joe Wilson probably 2 or 3 weeks ago, and we were walking from the House floor through the rotunda to the Speaker's office. It took us 30 minutes. It should have taken us 3. The reason is because every 3 steps, somebody would walk up to Joe Wilson and say, "Wow, you were right. Wow, you're my hero." So, no, the South Carolina delegation, the people of South Carolina have a lot to be proud of, and I think they represent us well.
Well, you know, one question I wanted to ask you, Tom, is if this is the legislation is advanced, it says it's non-binding and would not need Senate approval. Why is that?
It is binding. I don't know why it says non-binding. It is binding. If it passes by a majority of the House as an institution will bring the lawsuit. It does not require Senate approval. It's just that the House is going to bring it. You know, it's basically for vote nullification, that the House voted on these laws, and the Senate voted on them, and the President signed them into law, and now the President's choosing not to enforce the very laws that we passed and he signed. You know, that he has no power to do that. So that the House is voting for vote nullification, and it does not require a vote of the Senate. That's the beauty of it. Harry Reid can't stop it. Assuming we get a majority vote in the House, and I think we will, all we got to do is get a vote. So tell your listeners, let John Boehner and Eric Cantor know we need a vote.
I'm sensing that John Boehner doesn't want to bring this forward.
Well, again, I spoke with some leadership early on, and they thought it was radical, and I told them that's not radical. What's radical when you have the President standing up at the State of the Union address saying, "Look, Congress, if you don't enact the laws that I want, then I'm going to enact them without you." That, you know, what the President, more clear English words for that are, "Look, Congress, I know I took an oath to uphold the Constitution, but I'm going to violate it." That's radical. When the President stands up in front of the American people and says, "I'm not bound by the Constitution, I'm going to do what I want," that's radical.
Absolutely. Now, one of the other things, I saw your poll that you put out to your constituents down there, and, you know, they're talking about immigration reform. I found it very interesting that that was not a major focus on your folks from down there on the coast.
No, you know, I can tell you the 3 most important issues in my district that have been this way for the last 5 years, and that's jobs, jobs, and jobs. And, you know, I know certainly the debt, the country's debt and deficit is a huge issue, and the economy is a huge issue, but jobs, jobs, and jobs is my focus. And I think the President's policies have been an utter failure. The 2 years that the Democrats held the House and the Senate and the presidency, they passed 2 of the biggest job-killing, government-expanding, regulation-expanding laws in the last 50 years. Those are Dodd-Frank and Obamacare. And with all those additional regulations, we should not be surprised that, and with all those additional taxes and with all those additional costs, we shouldn't be surprised the economy is limping along and job production is almost non-existent. So I'm doing what I can to tear those back and make this country more competitive. I have a friend who's become a friend since I've been in Congress who is a professor at Harvard University, Michael Porter, and his family is from South Carolina. He's a brilliant man, brilliant. Got an undergraduate degree from MIT, a master's in economics from Harvard, and doctorate from Harvard, been a professor there for 30 years. He's like 65 years old. He's written 12 books on national competitiveness. He represents countries like Australia and Sweden, and I've brought him to Congress. I've done 6 events with him. I've got him in front of 80 congressmen to educate them, Democrats and Republicans, on what it takes to make this country competitive and why we're losing jobs to other countries, why companies choose to go elsewhere. So I'm actually trying to work a little bit with I'm trying to work as much as I can with the other side, because I think Democrats particularly and Republicans as well both need to be, you know, educated on what we need to be focused on to bring jobs back to this country.
I don't think I could agree with you any more than that. And how do you feel the working relationship? You've been there, I think, a year now. How is the working relationship? Has there been a shift? Is there any more working together, or is it as divided as it was maybe when you first went there?
You know, honestly, I think there may be a little more appetite for working together coming out of that shutdown than there was before then. But I hope that that's true, and I promise you that, you know, I'm certainly conservative, and I'm certainly going to work to protect our constitutional values and our freedom, but I also recognize that if we're going to get anything done, we've got to get participation from both sides. So you better believe I'm going to be working with both sides to try to make things happen to bring jobs back to this country.
Absolutely. And what did you think of Governor Haley's announcement of, what is it, Torrey, that's just moving into Spartanburg, Moore area? I think.
Oh, look, every job that we can bring in South Carolina that is a, you know, high-paying job, is I'm proud of it. You know, I was chairman of Horry County Council for 2 years before I went to Congress and helped put together an economic development corporation to make this county competitive, and you know, 1,400 jobs have been announced in the last 2 years, and I'm so proud of that. I'm trying to spread it throughout my district and throughout the state. I'm doing everything I can to let people know. I think South Carolina is going to be one of the most competitive places in the world if we keep going the way we are in terms of companies locating. And if I can just, I know I'm not going to make radical reform overnight. If I can just move the needle a little bit nationally to make this country think about what it needs to do to be competitive, I think that the sky's the limit. I think we've got a bright, bright future. I think we'll stop hemorrhaging jobs and start bringing them back.
Absolutely. Well, Congressman Tom Rice, I really appreciate you taking time. I know you're at home this week enjoying the weather and everything, but thank you so much for taking time with us on WCRS.
Enjoy it very much. Let me know when you want me back on.
All right. Thank you so much, Congressman Tom Rice. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
So there you go. There's Congressman Tom Rice down there at the beach. And it certainly was nice to be able to get his input and his view on things. I think that he definitely is someone who is working hard to make sure that South Carolina stays in the front. We really have an excellent delegation that does work hard and does work together for the good of South Carolina. So I hope you enjoyed our show today. We really had some interesting. We started out with Lieutenant Governor Glenn McConnell and some of his new announcements of things that are happening in his office down there. You do know, and I think he made an excellent point, is that the Lieutenant Governor's office is the Office on Aging, and that's where he feels the next Lieutenant Governor should put their interest and focus. So I thought that was a really good point, and sometimes people get away from that and start thinking about other parts that they would like to be involved in, but that is the major responsibility of the Lieutenant Governor as well as presiding over the Senate. So that was a very interesting interview. Also, then we talked about the Veterans Auditorium that had a dedication service. They have a beautiful new case that is a display case that is on display there with the items of U.S. Army Sergeant Eric A. Pfeiffer, who gave his life for our country, and he gave it very willingly. If you heard the letter and what he had to say and everything the commanding officer had to say in the letter, it was very moving, plus just the character of this young man, Eric A. Pfeiffer. And, of course, his dad was there, Bruce, and his stepmom, Sandra Pfeiffer, who live in 96. And I think they were very taken with what was said and what was done for them there. So we had a busy afternoon. I certainly hope you enjoyed the show. I try to keep everybody up on what's happening in Greenwood and around the world. So there you go. I'll be back in the morning on the I Love Ann show. Certainly hope you'll tune in with us and share the fun. Tomorrow morning we are going to have Mac Arnold. That's right, the Gas Can Blues man on the air with us. He's going to call in and tell us about his new restaurant, A Plate Full of Blues, right there in Greenville. Hey, I'm Ann Eller. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye-bye.